Do you generally talk politics with your family over the Thanksgiving holiday weekend? How's that working for you? Do you anticipate there could be fights this year over who voted for whom in the presidential race? I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. It is coming up on 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, November 23rd. We are going to talk with a guest psychologist about 10 strategies for a peaceful Thanksgiving, and we will welcome your questions, your thoughts, your concerns. How do you manage the divided feelings over the outcome of the election? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Alexandra Solomon, a licensed clinical psychologist at the Family Institute at Northwestern University. She's a clinical assistant professor in the Department of Psychology at Northwestern and the author of the upcoming book, Loving Bravely, 20 Lessons of Self-Discovery to Help You Get the Love You Want. She also blogs for Psychology Today. Her latest post, which we have posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, is You Voted for Whom? 10 Strategies for a Peaceful Thanksgiving. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I think a lot of us need your help this morning, Dr. Solomon, because there's always divided politics in this country, but for whatever reason, and you tell me if I'm wrong, it seems like it's even more intense this year.
Well, I think that you're completely right. There is there's politics, and then there's this. I think that we are all in some pretty uncharted waters here for a variety of reasons, but I think it makes it especially important that we have conversations like these going into our family gatherings this week.
Yeah. I mean, I remember fights a week. I come from a politically diverse family, and I do remember debates or arguments. And sometimes they would flare up growing up, over the Vietnam War, over Richard Nixon and impeachment, over Bill Clinton and impeachment. I mean, it just it comes up. It's hard to avoid. How do you recommend that we at least get into a mindset right now about how to handle this tomorrow?
Yeah, well, I think one of the really important things is keeping our highest goal in mind. And I think that especially at a time like this where there's so much fear and uncertainty and confusion about what lies ahead, I think there can be really great respite in being with family. You know, those traditions, those once a year, kind of everyone gathers, there's ritual, there's familiarity, there's the food, there's the children, the elders. There's something so important and rich about us being together, and it really anchors us. So I really love, in some ways, the timing of all of this, because it's a chance for us to return to something familiar at a time when there's so much unfamiliarity and uncertainty. So I have great hope for the potential for healing this Thanksgiving around many, many Thanksgiving tables.
Well, I hope so, too. But, you know, I know of someone who, how do I put this without invading privacy, someone who is not even going to go to a family Thanksgiving because of he learned that his parents, unbeknownst to him, did vote for Donald Trump. Like, just to put it that way, I mean, it was something, it shocked him. Yeah. And he can't understand. He can't understand why. He thinks it was a betrayal of sorts.
Yeah. I think that what he's feeling is such a common feeling. So it's, you know, like as you're saying, for generations, families have been debating politics on the table. But there's something that really gets us to the core. And I think for many people, it does end up feeling like a betrayal. That difference ends up feeling like far more than an intellectual difference. It's more like, I didn't know that you saw the world so very differently than I see the world. And that's what I think that people need to be managing as they go in. And for some families, it may not quite be time to be talking about it. And I'm not really an advocate for putting stuff under the rug. You know, I'm a couples therapist and I'm a family therapist. So I'm all about sort of bringing things out into the light of day for us to talk about. But if it's too hot and too tender, and if there are too many others watching, right? So we've got to be thinking about kids who are watching and members of our family who are particularly prone towards anxiety, depression, addiction, who have trauma histories. I think it makes sense to be really discerning about when and how these conversations happen. So for your friend, at some point, a conversation between him and his parents probably makes sense. And he'll need to go into the conversation with the frame of mind, I love you, and I don't understand where you're coming from. Let's see if and how we can build a bridge here.
So before dinner, and maybe even before we show up at our Thanksgiving Day dinner, how should families and friends prepare for potential conversations about politics?
So I'm aware of some families that are having a meta conversation before Thanksgiving. By that, I mean a conversation about conversation. So families are getting on group texts or in group emails and kind of setting some ground rules about whether politics will come up, and if it does, how do we want those conversations to go? And there are, I think, some pretty, I think it makes sense to have some ground rules or some tricks or tips in mind.
Well, you wrote some of the strategies here. For example, number one, connect with your shared highest values. So how do we do that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, we try and look and see where those are, you know. And I think it's so easy when we find out that somebody voted differently than we are to think that now we know nothing about that person. Okay, so let's say it's, my very dear cousin, right? I find out my very dear cousin voted in a way that I didn't. Okay, so what else do I remember and know about my cousin, and how can I connect with him or her around that, around our shared understanding that I know she really values, I don't know, the environment the way that I do, and let's go back to that issue. Or I know we both deeply, deeply adore our grandmother, and how can we connect around the importance of valuing our time with her this Thanksgiving? So what are the common threads that go through this family? What do we know to be true? Because it's so easy right now to slip into an us versus them mentality. And that's what that lack of safety and uncertainty feels like, is I need to know who's with me and who's against me. And that's toxic. It's hard to navigate that.
Yeah. You say we should speak for ourselves, speak for yourself. How would we not speak for ourselves?
Well, I think in this, the way these conversations have gone or go, there's so much at play here, right? The issues are so large. They're about everything. This election basically calls into question everything that we know or thought we knew. And so if I'm going to be talking about, for example, my fear, it's really helpful for me to ground my fear in the uniqueness of my story. So I'm going to invite collaboration across difference. If I can ground my fear, so the reason I'm struggling post-election is this, and if I can ground it in my story, my experience, and keep it very small and local to me, I invite empathy from my relatives in a way that I don't if I launch into Trump is, and it's so, and those voters are so. If I make it big, sweeping, if I invoke name-calling, generalization, that's going to push away those who view it differently, versus if I can stay really tight in and close in on my anxiety, my fear, my upset.
I know what you're getting at. So instead of saying, and this is hypothetical, Trump is a racist and anybody mm-hmm. who voted for him is a racist, which would spark off all sorts of heated arguments. You would say what I am struggling with is how this country, we're treating each other and or something along those lines.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a time for dialogue, not debate.
What's the difference?
So in debate, I'm looking to win. Right. In debate, I'm looking to win. I believe that I have the right answer. I'm looking to win. I'm listening to you in order to find flaws in what you're saying. I'm listening to you in order to critique you or take you down. In dialogue, what I want is to build a bridge with you. I want to collaborate with you. I want to look and find our common ground. In dialogue, I'm really open to reevaluating my assumptions. I'm curious to find something that surprises me that I didn't know before. I'm curious to, I'm looking for those kind of aha moments or those pieces that don't fit. So in that way, the way I like to imagine this is I'm inviting you to stand shoulder to shoulder with me, and let's look together at the problem, which is what, you know, whatever, our divided country, our the sort of fragileness that feels like is existing around the Thanksgiving table. So let's look together at the problem, sort of looking for opportunities to partner against sort of a shared problem. Or even around the question, what are we going to do to protect this family that we love so much from, you know, post-election conflict and divides? What are we going to do? How can we work together to protect our family?
We'll talk more about how we might do that as we gather for Thanksgiving after a very divisive election. And we'll welcome your questions and your strategies. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Conversations may be even more heated and more political than usual at this year's Thanksgiving dinner following a very divisive election season. We are talking with a guest clinical psychologist about how to talk to family and friends about politics and talking about strategies to keep the conversations productive and peaceful. And we're welcoming your questions. We're welcoming your own experiences. We're welcoming your hopes and fears. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Alexandra Solomon is a licensed clinical psychologist at the Family Institute at Northwestern University, a clinical assistant professor in the Department of Psychology at Northwestern University. She is also the author of the blog on Psychology Today, You Voted for Whom? 10 Strategies for a Peaceful Thanksgiving. And before we go to the phones, I wanted to follow up a little bit on that debate versus dialogue strategy that we were talking about before news, Dr. Solomon. I'm taking it that you would not advocate what I see being passed around Facebook from the left, mostly saying here are some arguments to you know, debate your Uncle Joe with on Thanksgiving. If he says X, you say Y.
Yeah, you know, to me, it always goes back to what's happening at the level of emotion. I think that there are some people who can debate and really stay in what we call like the zone of regulation, where they can really feel connected to their quote-unquote opponent, and they can stay regulated. They can avoid hitting below the belt. They can keep sort of the volume under control. I think the problem is when we slip into either fight or flight, right? If we think of sort of the zone of regulation as being in the middle and slipping into fight or flight as being those extremes. So slipping into flight is when we shut down, retreat, withdraw, disengage, but it's kind of a hostile disengagement. And then flight, and then fight, of course, is when the volume goes up and we're pounding our fists on the table and there's a lot of anger, a lot of fear. And I have concerns about the impact on the rest of the house for debate that slips into that real intense mode. I'm thinking about the kids. I'm thinking about more vulnerable members of the family. And so I think if there are two people who really enjoy a heady intellectual debate and they can stay in their zone of regulation, maybe they, you know, head to a part of the house where others aren't and they can kind of go there if they feel like they can go there in the service of love. If it's going to tear apart bonds, and lead to a cutoff, I don't know that now is the time. It's really soon. We are within weeks of this election result, and there's so much that we don't know. So it's hard for me to get my head around thinking of two relatives who maybe don't see each other much more than, you know, once or twice a year to go toe-to-toe on a topic that's this hot, mm-hmm. this soon.
Let's take some calls. Rich in Rhinelander is with us first. Hi, Rich.
Hi, my suggestion is sort of outlandish, so cut me off at any point.
Okay.
Happy Thanksgiving,
no, I'm just kidding.
By the way. But my hope is or was that during this period of time that the Obamas and the Trumps would have gathered at the White House together for 2 to 4 hours as a family. The news clip immediately before the topic began was that Obamas were going to be at the White House and the Trumps were going to be, I think, in Boca Raton or someplace like that. I think I'm not big on ritual or symbolic gestures, but I was raised in a rooming house. There's a bar downstairs where hunters gathered, and every deer hunting season when we were kids, my mom and dad closed down the bar for the dinner, and the hunters came upstairs. These men primarily were people who the only thing they had in common was hunting. They came from all different political perspectives, and I think it is possible for people to demonstrate over food that for the time being, things are being set aside because we're not only grateful for who we are, we're grateful for being able to be in the presence of others. It would not have been a bad idea to invite Jill Stein and Gary Johnson, for that matter, after this kind of election.
Thank you, Rich. Well, how about that in terms of just an idea of how to bring the country together? That might have been nice to have a big politically diverse Thanksgiving meal at the White House.
Mm-hmm. I know. I heard somewhere along the way that, you know, Republicans and Democrats used to share meals, like they'd have lunch together, you know, back 20, 30 years ago, and that really rarely happened. So certainly all those ways that we can reach across the lines that divide us are so important right now, really seeking understanding. It's so much of, you know, relational, the kind of heart of relational skills is being able to reach across lines of difference, really being willing to come with a heartfelt apology, really being able to say, I see, I want to see where you're coming from. Like, talk to me so that I can understand. So much of the time we listen in order to formulate our response. And so what about shifting to what we call active listening, right? Listening in order to understand. I really want to understand where you're coming from. And if we can offer that, if I commit to offering that kind of listening to you and you commit to offering that kind of listening to me, we're both going to be heard. But we're going to be heard in a way that's much more loving than if I am raising my voice and insisting on being heard. You must listen to me now, right?
Yeah. And how about that, about how we could just, his story about the hunters who came from all different political perspectives who had hunting in common, and everybody just, you know, kind of gathered around the food and the camaraderie, and the political differences didn't have to come up.
Yeah. I think that what becomes really difficult is right now the political differences are tied so much in who we are, yeah, right? The religion we practice, the color of our skin, the country we come from. So it becomes really hard to make politics a purely intellectual exercise at this point. I think that's really where the challenge comes. Yeah. Our gender, right? It's really hard to separate kind of the intellectual of politics from the body I live in, the, you know, color of our skin, all that.
Yeah, and in fact, one of the things you hear quite often from Hillary Clinton supporters in particular, because Trump supporters will say, you know what, I thought some of those things Trump said were outrageous too, but I just, you know, think he'll be better for the economy. But I just dismiss those other things that he said. And then the Hillary Clinton supporter is saying, well, I get that you feel like you've been left behind in today's economy, but how mm-hmm. can you forget those other things mm-hmm. that he said?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we would. Yes, I've heard that as well from many Trump supporters, that they want to kind of parse apart liking this part and not liking this part. And I think there's some, I think because he's been a candidate where it's been hard to understand the heart of who he is, what his kind of core is, I think it's easy to kind of feel like, well, I want the economic stuff. And I don't really think that the more problematic stuff about race and gender, I don't really think that's going to come to pass.
Yeah. So how does the in this case, the Hillary supporter, converse with somebody who feels as though it was unforgivable to overlook those other things?
Yeah. Well, I think one piece of it is self-care. I know I've been, I live in a pretty, I practice in a pretty blue field, in a pretty blue community. So certainly had more conversations with Hillary supporters, and one of the things that comes up a lot is the need for self-care and viewing this as a marathon, not a sprint. Mm-hmm. And remembering that you don't have to attend every argument that you're invited to. And there's sort of a line between, it can feel like if I'm not confronting and trying to change minds at every moment of every day, I'm not somehow fighting the good fight. But there's, you know, the old saying, like, you can't pour from an empty cup, right? So it's really important for people to also take care of themselves and have time in their day when they're not thinking about this, strategizing, constructing their next argument, figuring out whose mind they're going to change next. There's, I think, one of the really important pieces right now is self-care and knowing that it's okay to unplug and recharge a battery.
Jim in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Jim.
Hey, good morning. First of all, I would avoid the conversation entirely. People travel in, friends and family, getting together from thousands of miles away. They should have something better to discuss than something that's been run through the muck for over a year and a half. So I don't think it'd be that hard, except we're having this conversation only because of who won and who lost. I don't recall this stuff taking place when other people might have felt badly about some of the election results, and I just don't understand. I guess like colleges having to have therapy sessions and they schedule them after the election. They obviously didn't plan on this happening, and I think it's just because it's such a surprise, and change is hard to face for some people, and the fact that you lost.
I will say, Jim, I'm glad that you called and brought up this point. We had some Facebook comments along these lines as well. We have in the past talked about having peace over the Thanksgiving dinner in terms of people having different political views. This one is more closely tied to the election since it just happened. In fact, here over Act 10 and other things, we've had talks about how to keep a peaceful family dialogue going. However, Dr. Solomon, what about that? I mean, do you think we would be having this conversation if Hillary Clinton won and not Donald Trump?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we're not going to know that.
Yeah.
One, we know that the country is so divided, and that we've always mm-hmm. had a country of Republicans and Democrats, right? There's something that's so divisive right now and so divided. And I think that the way the rhetoric played out in the months leading up to the election, and I think that's a big piece of
we've never had an election where there was a candidate like Donald Trump saying some really outrageous to some comments that were that might have ended the campaign of any other presidential candidate. They were so they were deemed so politically incorrect and it was the establishment that said, boy, that's outrageous. He's that's not going to work. And so this is a different election year because he was a very different candidate.
Well, and when we think about sort of how Donald Trump's way of being in the world translates to the Thanksgiving table, I think oftentimes, okay, so if Donald Trump was a husband, if I was Donald and Melania's couples therapist, what would I want to be supporting, Donald shifting? And a lot of it is shifting from that inflammatory rhetoric to working with apology. I mean, I think a really essential relationship skill is the ability to be accountable, to say, I understand that my words hurt you, even if my intention wasn't to hurt you. So there are some kind of core relational skills that I would want to support him growing if he was a client of mine in therapy. So the way that he is in the world, the way that translates to the Thanksgiving table ends up being pretty problematic, right? That sort of bombastic, take no prisoners, double down approach. Clearly it works enough to win him the election, but it doesn't work around the Thanksgiving table. So I think that's really the difference.
Yeah. Anything else, Jim?
Well, only the fact that you brought up Act 10, and obviously there'd be the three Scott Walker elections. And when you look at who won and who lost those elections, I just don't think that the reaction is...
I'm just saying that we've had this type of conversation before, in terms of the polarized electorate.
Right, and we have. And I think we have because there's one side that seems more vocal and more active in their actually more demonstrative of their ascension.
So what's your, I guess, what is your point with that?
Well, I'm just asking you, as having hosted this, that, you know, where does this all stem from? Would we be having this same discussion if Hillary Clinton had won the election?
Well, maybe we would be. There'd be still be debates over lock her up.
Well, I think he's already backed away from
Well,
that.
He just did, yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I don't think that we would in quite the same way, because I think that there is, like, as you were saying, there's this idea of change, right? There's this dramatic change coming, but none of us quite know what that change looks like. So I think the conversation will be completely different had Hillary won.
Yeah. So what about Jim just saying, hey, his family is going to avoid talking about politics completely, and it can be done. Is that a strategy? Just don't talk about it.
I think it is. Yeah. I think it is, for sure. I mean, I like how he's saying that, you know, if that's the best we have to talk about. I mean, I think there are other, you know, other things to talk about. And I think about my social media feed, right? My Facebook page is mostly all political kinds of articles and ideas being shot back and forth. And I think we have lost track of sort of catching up around the other details of our lives. And I think it's a wonderful idea to use Thanksgiving to also connect about other aspects of our lives and say that maybe now is not the time or the place. The difficulty is that maybe half the family, you know, wants to leave it that way, and the other half really feels like they need to talk. So I think starting a conversation with, you know, are you available for a conversation about politics? Do you want to have this conversation, and kind of taking it from there?
So Sue called in. She couldn't stay with us and wanted to know if you have any advice on how to talk to someone about politics who refuses to or is unable to have a calm conversation.
Yeah, I mean, now is not the time, then. If the conversation can't be calm and the conversation can't be in the service of greater understanding, I think now is not the time. And maybe just sending that person love and hoping that they will do their own internal work to figure out what exactly makes that kind of conversation so difficult. So finding that thread, like I guess it doesn't matter who the person supported, but if that person, based on what's triggering that person, right? So it's finding that aspect. What is so triggering about this election result that makes it so difficult for me to even have a conversation without slipping into yelling and pointing fingers and blaming and name-calling, and really working on healing whatever it is that's behind that big, strong emotional upset. So we talk about primary and secondary feelings. The secondary feeling is the yelling, the rage, the anger. And so there's always a primary feeling that hangs out behind that. So what's behind the anger? That's the primary feeling. It's a more tender, more vulnerable feeling that hangs out behind anger usually. So it's something about hurt or sadness or loss or fear or anxiety or shame. So anger is very often a cue that we need to kind of dig a little bit deeper and figure out what else is going on inside of us beneath and behind that kind of angry, bombastic, combative front.
Mary in La Crosse, I just have a minute before a newscast, but I'd love to hear your strategy, Mary.
Hi. I come from a family also that's very divided and always has been so, but I decided to do a distraction. We have a family reunion in September, and so I went back through photos because my husband's family has had a reunion over 100 years, and I put together a big box of loose photos, and as much as they are volatile, they all really do love each other, and I put the box on the table, and I said, here's a box of pictures that you can look through and take any that you want, and so that really did a good job of kind of distracting people, and they enjoyed looking through the photos.
And they're talking about happy memories, so thank you for that idea, Mary. We'll have our guest, Dr. Alexandra Solomon, react after the news. Well, following a divisive election season, the country is deeply polarized right now, and we are talking about how that might affect our Thanksgiving holiday. Do you anticipate some family feuds over politics? What are your strategies in dealing with a political debate at the Thanksgiving table? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is a licensed clinical psychologist, Alexandra Solomon. She is a clinical assistant professor in the Department of Psychology at Northwestern University. She also wrote a blog for Psychology Today, and her latest post is, "You Voted for Whom? 10 Strategies for a Peaceful Thanksgiving." So we've had busy lines all morning, but now we have an open line for you if you want to share your strategy for keeping your Thanksgiving peaceful and meaningful. Are you concerned how the conversation will go? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So, Dr. Solomon, we heard from a caller just before our newscast who says that at a family reunion in September, when we are in the height of this very divisive election season, she ended up putting a big box of photographs on her on her table and said, "Hey, have at it." And instead of debating politics, people were, you know, reminiscing and talking about family memories.
I love that. I just love it, and I love the idea of being distracted right now by something that is so playful and reminiscing. So the idea of trading photos and talking about memories, I mean, that's the heart of family, right? Is these are the people with whom we have a past, a present, and hopefully a future. So that's a beautiful idea. I also love the idea of the host and hostess being having games available. So these things that can kind of structure the time and encourage people to engage with each other in a completely different way. So playing a game, we've got a game in our house called Pie Face, where you load up this, you know, little set that has with whipped cream and turn the dial and it's going to pop in somebody's face, right? So these sort of playful, ridiculous, silly games that where people of all ages can be involved, and there can be a sense of connection and gratitude for being together at such a, you know, such a sort of confusing time.
I thought you meant stuffing our face with pie, but
well, that too.
Yes, that's hard to debate when your pie hole is full of pie. But you do say one of your strategies is to avoid the alcohol, right?
Yeah, this is a tricky one. I mean, what about the idea of families opting for a dry Thanksgiving? We think that alcohol, you know, increases the festive nature and reduces tension, but alcohol is ultimately at its core a depressant. And it just, we're less mindful of what's going on inside of our own bodies. So we may not notice that we're getting increasingly anxious, increasingly angry. And certainly it can lead to tempers flaring between people. So a dry Thanksgiving, or really coming in with an intention to limit yourself this year. Just, again, in the service of family peace and connection.
Paul in Oshkosh is with us. Hello, Paul.
Hi. One of my thoughts, I was taught a long time ago, if you can't say something nice about somebody or something, then just don't say anything at all. So I think at Thanksgiving time, talk about politics, but keep it on a positive. If you're a Clinton supporter, you're upset about things with Trump, maybe your comments, instead of negative towards President-elect Trump, should be, well, I hope with all of his negotiating experience, he's able to negotiate better trade contracts, or he's better to get economics and take the conversation in that direction. Be supportive of what he thinks, what he feels he wants to accomplish, because we'd all benefit from that, instead of making negative comments about the things you don't like about the man.
So say something nice about the candidate that you may not have voted for. What about that, Dr. Solomon?
Well, certainly I think that I think it's incumbent on all of us to find ways to be hopeful and optimistic, you know, regardless of who we voted for. So I certainly am all in favor of optimism and hope and keeping an open mind. And really, see, I think for Clinton supporters, it is important to seek an understanding from Trump supporters about why it is you voted the way that you did. And I think it's easy for Clinton supporters to feel like, well, you must have voted that way because you are a racist, a misogynist, da-da-da-da-da. And that's probably not the case, hopefully, at the Thanksgiving table. So really seeking understanding. Okay, what was it that appealed to you? Help me understand. I think that's a really valid, legitimate question to ask.
I love how you ended your blog. You said that another colleague taught you this. Say what you mean what you say, but don't say it in a mean way. This Thanksgiving, I hope you can speak your truth with love. That strikes, you know, it resonates with me. But and I know you wrote a whole blog on it, but how do we speak our truth with love?
Yeah. I mean, if a Clinton supporter's truth is, I'm afraid, I'm upset, I'm angry, I think it's okay to name those feelings without blaming the Trump supporter across the table from you as being the root cause of your feelings. So I think it's okay to name your internal experience without pointing fingers or blaming or making sweeping statements. I think it's also really important for Trump supporters to kind of stay close in, stay small, less is more, right? I think that being mindful of not showing up at Thanksgiving wearing your Trump T-shirt or your Make America Great Again hat, I think those are sort of provocative statements. I think less is more for a Trump supporter. So really avoiding gloating or, you know, excessive optimism and celebration, especially if you know there are folks at the table who didn't vote the way that you did. So being empathic and kind of less is more, I think, is really a helpful state of mind for Trump supporters to be in as they approach the Thanksgiving table as well.
You know, I just mentioned that one of our shows tomorrow on Thanksgiving is about practicing gratitude and the benefits of gratitude. And that's one of the tips on your list of strategies. How does gratitude fit into this?
Mm-hmm. You know, at our Thanksgiving table, we a lot of times we'll go around the table and everyone will share what they're grateful for. I think that's a really nice practice to invite everyone at the table to put into words aspects of their gratefulness. And I think that keeps us focused, like the caller was saying, keeps us focused on what's positive, what's possible, what's plentiful right here and now. And gratitude is the antidote to fear. And right now, there's a lot of energy of fear sort of swirling around us, and we can ground ourselves by being grateful. What are we grateful for? What is plentiful and good right here, right now, in my life, today, as it exists right now? And so going into Thanksgiving and kind of keeping that framework helps us navigate fear, pessimism, anger, by focusing on what we have, what's around us, and what's good.
Dorothy in Wausau is with us. Hello, Dorothy.
Hi. My problem is that none of these things, that most people talk about between the two camps, are relevant to me, and I find it almost impossible to function socially ever since what happened with the election. If someone asked me right now what I'm thankful for, I would be tempted to be sarcastic and say, well, gee, I'm thankful for all the people that voted for Trump and hence also voted for the complete decimation of this planet.
Well, Dorothy, I don't have time to really engage because we're almost out of time. That's exactly what we're talking about, and that would not be a good strategy mm-hmm. to pursue, I would think, Dr. Solomon, if you want to have peace around the Thanksgiving table.
It's that primary-secondary feeling difference, right? So your secondary feeling is this kind of defensive, sarcastic way of being in the world, and that protects you from how scared and upset yeah. you most likely are. And that's really, really real. And And so there again, probably, yeah, less is more. That may not be, the Thanksgiving table may not be a place to open that kind of a conversation, but maybe just being honest about your fear. I'm having a hard time right now. Not even really quite sure where to start with all of it, but I'm having a hard time.
Yeah. So you also included be the change you want to see on your list of strategies. So why?
I love that quote, right? Be the change you want to see in the world. So insisting on holding the bar really high on ourselves, right? I refuse to name call. I refuse to slip into sarcasm and despair. I'm going to, even when I'm scared, I'm going to be honest about my fear, sit with my fear, and then find my way back to connection, love, and courage, because it is, it's what holds us all together. So if we insist on, if everyone comes to Thanksgiving insisting on being love, embodying love, being open and available for connection, regardless of how we voted, then we're showing up with an energy that is inviting those bridges, those little bridges. And I think that's, there's the other quote about don't ever underestimate the power of a small group of people to change the world. Right? Indeed, that's the only thing that ever has changed the world. And so families can be those change agents. If we come in insisting on seeking connection, being curious, having an open heart, speaking with love, that's really powerful.
I was just, in our final minute, do you have a final tip you'd like our listeners to take away from our conversation?
I think that sort of ability to be loved, to be open. I think also healthy boundaries. So if a conversation is going somewhere and you're finding yourself all filled up, saying, I'm done. I'm going to tag out. I'm going to tag out with love, right? I'm going to tag out. I'm going to go slice up the pie, carve up the turkey. I'm not able to participate fully with an open heart at this moment in time. So I'm going to take myself out of the conversation.
That is a good place. Alexandra Solomon, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Alexandra Solomon is a licensed clinical psychologist at Northwestern University. Thanks to Brianne Shasso for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.